This episode of Mining Stock Daily is brought to you by Ascot Resources, focused on the development of exploration at the premier gold mine in British Columbia's Golden Triangle. Follow the latest developments from the premier mine at ascotgold.com.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back into Mining Stock Daily. We have some market commentary today once again. But before we get to our conversation with our returning champion, Mr. Chris Temple, let's take a look at some numbers here. Gold having another ugly day, but coming back to that double bottom around 1770. A little bit of a bounce, currently trading about 1772, but not much. The gold miners per the GDX, GDXJ, pretty ugly charts. Pretty low, actually one of the lowest I've seen it on the GDX in quite some time, down to 3305. Silver, on the other hand, basically flat on the day at $27.30. We are going to talk precious metals here in a little bit, but it's glad to see Chris Temple back from his Mardi Gras parties last night. He's alive and in charge. I know it's a special time of year for my fellow Catholic here. I'm not Catholic, but I do respect the traditions of Lent, my friend. Welcome back to the podcast.
Well, thank you. And in fact, the reason I had to push it off a little bit today is I had to go to Mass for Ash Wednesday because I didn't make it at 7 o'clock this morning.
No, very good. Well, that's because you're too hungover for Mardi Gras, but I can't blame you. All right, Chris, let's get to business, my friend. It's pretty important news this morning. We're going to start out right with the producer price index because those numbers came out hot. I mean, then the markets really were volatile right out of the bat after those numbers came out. Can you kind of walk us through what that index told us and why the reaction in the general markets?
Well, actually, the estimate, Trevor, was 0.4% monthly gain, and it was 1.3, so it blew it away by threefold. The year-over-year number is still slightly below the Fed's alleged 2% target for everything, but the direction, the trajectory of things is clear. And so far, and it's kind of surprised me that we've not seen a sharper reaction from the markets in some ways than we have, but so far what the markets have accepted, and this is why gold has been very much a laggard, is that the markets are utterly thrilled with the idea of some inflation. They're utterly thrilled with the idea that the Fed is going to sit on its hands and watch unfolding price pressures for some time to come, as they've made very clear, because to the markets, and I'm speaking of generalist investors, to them, that means that the battery metals are great. We're going to have infrastructure. We're going to have green energy. We're going to have umpteen different things rising as the Fed and fiscal authorities both get behind it all. And in that kind of an environment, even if inflation is rising up, gold is going to be a laggard, silver may be less so, and it's going to be all these other commodities and themes that get investor money when they have been made to believe that the macro landscape is safe, that the Fed has done away with the possibility because of all of these extra tools that we're ever going to have a major recession again, that we're ever going to have a crash again. Our new Treasury Secretary is on record as saying as we won't have another crash in her lifetime. I don't know what that means. We can debate, we can be cute about that or sarcastic. But this is why you've seen so many things recently get pushed up for a few days, then they go someplace else. It's the battery metals, it's lithium, it's uranium, it's the marijuana stocks, which have had a screaming run. It's darn near everything. And in that environment, gold suffers because it's more of a crisis hedge. It's not going to collapse, I don't believe. I'm not surprised to see it get back down again to that very key technical level I've talked of for months of 1750 to 1775. But, you've got this undergirded, you've got this underlying mindset, Trevor, of people thinking that the landscape is safe. It's just, where's the hotter trade today? Now, if the producer numbers are followed by a hot consumer price number and you get that a couple or 3 months running, then you're going to see more trouble. And I think today you've got a shot across the bow when you see the dollar, which was weakening again, has shot back up a little bit. Long-term interest rates keep rising. They're getting near an incredibly important chart point where I'm probably going to tell people to go long treasuries again. So we'll see. But we've had such moves in all of these things that, yeah, a lot of volatility is going to creep in. And there's way more downside risk to most of this stuff right now than further upside reward in the near term.
Well, I wonder if you can comment on my observation here is the last couple of trading days, really early in the morning of trading, there has been quite a bit of volatility. And then about, you know, maybe within 2 or 3 hours of after that dip, the dip buyers come in and pull the thing back up, and maybe they are their own plunge protection team. Who's to say? But really, it just seems like the general equities in the U.S. are just really trying to hold on, but anything of any substance could actually cause this thing to really start correcting pretty hard.
Well, it could. We don't, you know, so far, threats from the Biden administration of potential domestic travel curbs didn't faze anybody very much. That whole trial balloon, I think, has had its moment and probably won't be mentioned again because the number of hospitalizations is collapsing in the country due to COVID. So that's good news. We're going to see what happens with the stimulus thing and whatnot. I mean, to me, the big picture, Trevor, still is that the level of the stock market and this big run that we've had for the last few months is way beyond what is going to be reality as far as the level of the recovery we're going to see, I think, and how healthy the economy can stay going forward with the choking debt levels that we already have. And that's one of the things I think, and maybe the markets in some sense are correct to have not overreacted, at least yet, to this really hot producer price number. You know, when I was talking several days ago with our mutual friend Bill Powers and talking about this kind of thing, I kind of pushed back on this whole broad unfolding inflation narrative and 70s style inflation is coming back. No, it's not, because mathematically it can't. You don't have the same economic environment today in many respects that you did in the 70s. There is not the room in the economy and in people's buying power and in businesses' buying power to have consumers and customers able to absorb significant price increases. So, yes, we're going to see these spurts of producer price numbers as these numbers catch up, especially with the rally in oil, if you believe that's sustainable. I question that, but I've been wrong on that to this point. We see some of the other price increases in even grains and things like that. And with consumers unable to absorb a lot of these price increases, somebody's going to eat it or something's going to, you know, hit a wall. And you either have high prices cripple demand and you see demand weaken again and these price spurts for various things end, or you see corporations have to absorb some of this stuff and corporate profits get hit, or it's a combination of those things. But, you know, I question this narrative, Trevor, that we're going to have a really, at least yet, that we're going to have this open-ended inflationary boom where we're not going to have any hiccups along the way. And look, if you believe that, you know, go whole hog in grains and base metals and energy and, you know, kumquats for that matter. If you question that, as I do, then you got to keep a little bit of powder dry. I've actually been having my members take profits on a few things recently, and we're going to be taking more profits, raising more cash here in the near term.
I want to ask you about the bonds here. I mean, specifically that benchmark 10-year. It did reach up to 1.33 this morning on the yield. You know, we don't talk about the bond market a whole lot. It's just interesting to watch this movement. But if you're watching the 10-year and maybe even the 30-year of note, what's this telling you? I mean, to have this easy monetary policy from the Fed, are they, you know, can they continue to allow these bonds to continue to rise?
This is a game of chicken right now between the Fed and a few of the bond market vigilantes of old, seemingly rising from the dead. One of the points that I have made continually, and I know you've heard me say this, is that these guys out there that are all about price suppression and manipulation and stuff when it comes to precious metals, which, you know, my opinion on that nonsense, the real price suppression for a long time now has been a suppression of the price of money. It's been interest rates. And that is reverberated everywhere else. Because there is no price discovery in the bond market, because the Fed has this everyone gets a trophy mentality and is scared to death to let even garbage corporations go out of business for fear it's going to take everything down with it, everything's skewed. There's nothing that's real out there. It's the reason, and it's the environment why you can see people that have utterly no idea what they're doing chase a GameStop higher or get wrapped up in the silver squeeze trade recently, which lasted all of a day and a half, and any of the rest of this stuff, because the Fed has just gone so stupid in how they have let everything get this speculative. Now, two reasons for the backup in yields. Number one, of course, is because there is some semblance of a risk on attitude, whether it's, you know, some sectors it's real, some sectors it's fantasy. That'll be sorted out eventually. But yeah, a lot of people are selling or maybe even shorting longer term treasuries to some extent because they buy this whole idea that we're going to have an open end reflation slash inflation trade that's going to make everybody rich on stocks and copper and lithium and battery metals and uranium and everything else. And then obviously the last thing in that environment you want to own are long-term treasuries. And I think you've got a little bit of a trade that's developing that when I first got in this business just over four decades ago, you had what were called the bond market vigilantes. And that was when the market actually was a market for treasuries and everything else. And when the U.S. uniquely in those days, not uniquely anymore, but back then when the U.S. was debauching the currency and running huge deficits and stuff like that, the bond market traders could punish the U.S. for doing that by either selling or not buying, as the case may be, treasury securities. And when you had weaker demand and the treasury needing to raise more money, value of treasury bonds went down and the price went up. Now, the Fed for a long time now has been the buyer of last resort, sometimes the only buyer. We're going to get to the point like the Bank of Japan eventually where the Fed is the only buyer of treasuries, but we're in kind of this in-between period right now where the Fed has to wonder how long they can take their thumb off the scale just a little and let long-term yields go up, which they've wanted because it helps the banking system. And you have a steeper yield curve, and that helps the financials and everything like that. So all in all, that's a good thing. But you have to wonder at what point does the long-term interest rate get up to a level where it starts to more seriously threaten the stock market, all the leverage that's out there, and all the rest of that stuff. For a long time, when we have been in now for a number of years, a few decades, the secular bull market in treasuries, which has seen yields go from well up into the double digits to near zero at one point, now trying to get up off of the zero level. On the way down, looking at the 10-year note, which most everybody uses as a bellwether these days, we hit 1.4% and bounced a few different times. Now we're going higher, and we're approaching, as you pointed out, 133 today. We're approaching that 1.4%. That's going to be very interesting to watch, Trevor, because if we, for whatever reason, whether it's traders' momentum and they're just going to force the market this direction, or everything stays together, maybe the stock market, after meandering in recent days, hits a new high and everybody doubles down on the long risk assets and sell or short treasuries thing. If we go above 1.4% with any conviction, you're going to see a stampede of people shorting treasury bonds. And I don't think it would last terribly long, but it would really knock the legs out from under the stock market. So as much as anything, that and, you know, the dollar, which was weakening and has strengthened again concurrently with this hotter PPI number and stuff, they bear watching, because whatever happens fundamentally, we still could have a market accident where either a dollar rally or a further treasury sell-off and spike in yields, one or the other or both, could knock the legs out from under a lot of these overextended rallies fast.
So we are driving up to a fork in a road where there will be a decision made, and it's just coming up here pretty soon.
We will. Let me just add this real quick. Yeah. We will get to the point where the Fed will come out with a mechanism to keep the long end in check as well. Whether they do it on their terms or after the market throws a fit remains to be seen. It's probably going to be the latter. The Fed's going to wait too long, and a spike in yields and a dollar will cause a lot of these other risk assets to sell off sharply, and then they'll panic, and then they'll make sure that they don't let long-term rates go up again like that.
So would that be that yield curve control that we have continued to be hearing about for the last year?
That'll come.
Okay. I'm actually kind of surprised. You know, we've been talking about it long enough. It seems like every month when the Fed has their meetings, we've talked about, well, maybe this is the month where they mention something, but it hasn't really happened.
No, so. And it's really, it hasn't been necessary, Trevor, number one. And number two, again, the Fed to some extent has wanted this steepening yield curve within reason, because it gives all kinds of positive signals to the markets and to investors that things are healthy, that banks are going to be able to loan more money because there's more of a yield spread there. Not the situation where you had a flat or inverted yield curve, which typically warns of recession or deflation type of thing. So with their whole mindset these days and their whole public narrative that they're pining for more inflation, they're pining to see prices rise, they don't want to get in the way of it. They're going to sit back and watch it develop for a while. Jim Bullard, who's with the St. Louis Fed a day or two ago, was saying that he'd be happy if they let inflation run hot for a few years, because for so many years it's been below their 2%, so that things even out. I mean, this is a signal they're trying to give. But the problem is, for as much power as the Fed has had to keep all of these balls in the air way longer than a lot of people thought possible, still in the end, they're not going to completely defy the laws of mathematics. And, you know, once upon a time, and I'll give you a quick example. In 1987, one of the two major factors that caused a stock market crash that fall was that within about 3 or 4 months, you had a spike in the 10-year Treasury yield from 7% to over 10%. And that was enough of a spike proportionately for a stock market that was running up all year long, that for the stock market's yield to compete with that double-digit yield that developed on Treasuries was just unsustainable. And that was one of the big things that knocked it down. And interestingly, back then, the perpetrator of that huge spike in Treasury yields was Japan, by basically boycotting Treasury auctions until the yields got up that high. Now, we're not in that boat where we're going to see anybody boycott a Treasury auction and trash the market. Now, today's 20-year Treasury note auction was pretty lackluster. That hasn't helped the market sentiment on most everything today. But if things were to get dire, we all know that, unlike even in 1987, the Fed is a buyer last resort. They won't let things get totally out of hand. But, you know, after that, we had a period where 7% was the level at which a rising 10-year yield would knock the pins from under the stock market. Then it was 4%. Now it was 3%. Today, it's probably, we wouldn't even have to get up to 2% to knock the legs out from under the stock market. We don't know where it's going to be. So, yes, the Fed has wanted this steepening yield curve for the signals it allegedly gives of health and free-flowing credit and all this other kind of stuff. But there will be a point where it's too much and where it starts to affect the market. And we won't get above 2% on a 10-year note without that happening, if we even make it that far.
It's hard to believe a 10-year note being up to 2. We haven't seen that since summer of 2019, well before COVID.
Right.
Really fascinating. Chris, I do want to talk to you about the precious metals, specifically what's happening with silver here. But quick, if you can give me and the listeners a quick bit about your thoughts on today's price shove down in gold. We have reached officially that double bottom. We're, you know, that's an important lever here of support. We hopefully want to see this hold and hopefully bounce. I gotta tell you, like, it's pretty ugly out there for gold and the gold miners.
Well, look, I've been saying for some time, and I have a number, as you know, because you get my stuff. I have a number of companies on my list that are in gold exploration. I love every single one of them. I haven't recommended selling anything recently as far as individual companies, and don't intend to. Last summer, when gold was nearing $2,100 an ounce, and I said it was party over, we got out of our ETFs and trading positions, but we've stayed with the individual companies, and we will continue to do that. But as I alluded to earlier, when you have the overwhelming sentiment among generalist investors being that there is so much to play with in terms of the green energy themes and all the rest of the stuff and everything else that we've seen go up in the stock market, who the hell wants to own gold in that scenario? Because to them, and if you're a gold bug out there, whether you like it or not doesn't matter. This is the reality. To these 99% of investors who are generalist investors and are not gold bugs, there is no reason to own gold right now. I'll tell you when it'll come, is if I'm proven correct, and I think it's a question of time, and this recovery, such as it is that we're having in the economy, runs into reality. And again, the reality including that everything is so choked by debt right now that it's almost impossible to have much in the way of additional growth. Then we will see a return to an environment we had as often as not since really the 2008 crash. And that was when my favorite, you know, investing theme was called the odd couple, when you wanted to be long treasuries and long gold, because for all of the efforts of money printing by the Fed, it just wasn't having that much traction with economic growth. And I believe that's where we're going back to. So frankly, the best environment for gold specifically, Trevor, will be when the rest of the market corrects and the Fed can insist all it wants it's going to keep printing money, but you know, it's the old pushing on a string proverb that people have used in the past with the Fed. Print all the money you want, but if people are unable or unwilling to spend it, or they're already so far in debt that they can't, then it doesn't matter how much free money you put out there. And when we get back to that mindset in the markets, and we will, that is when gold will be leading the pack instead of trailing the pack. The question is how much damage it does to everything else, good and bad, if that situation develops. But you know, that's why we've seen gold continue to do poorly. And now with the knee-jerk reaction of a lot of people to sell gold when you see prices interest rates rather rise, and a dollar rally again, you know, it's not, you know, gold is not firing on even half of its cylinders right now, but it will.
All right. Well, one thing that's really kind of been outperforming gold, because it's mainly flat to a little bit up, is silver.
Yep.
That's obviously made the news lately due to the hashtag silver squeeze. You know, Chris, I mentioned last week, like, I was really hoping that this week I'd not really talk about the silver squeeze, but with a couple of reports that came out over the weekend, it's really hard to ignore. So we had one guest yesterday. We'll have another one later this week. And so I know you've been pretty public with your thoughts on this silver squeeze, but with this, do you see a fundamental case between supply and demand when it comes to the actual silver metal here? I mean, we're obviously seeing bullion dealers not have supply. The mints don't have the supply to create more coins. If you have, we have trust changing the prospectus over the weekend. Give us a counterpoint here and what you're seeing.
Well, I got a couple of thoughts on that. First of all, you are seeing a proper rise in price reflected for where the silver market truly is tight. And that is in the amount of silver that's in demand right now for physical coins. You know, try and buy it for, I mean, I remember the days when you could buy silver, from an A-Mark or an Engelhard or someplace like that for 2% over spot. And spot was $5 or $6 an ounce. Those days are long gone. If you can find any silver at all, what is it over spot? You'd probably know better than me, 20 or 30% these days?
Yeah, I think like 1 ounce was on like American Eagles were $6 or $7 last I saw.
Yeah, I mean, it's not cheap to, you know, the premiums are huge. So you have had some reflection of that where I think there's a disconnect, and it's because people look at just one part of the story and they start from a position that something's going wrong. They don't start analytically and say, okay, what's all the moving parts of silver? They start oftentimes prodded by one of the conspiracy theorists out there that silver is being played with or there's something nefarious about it. You got to find some evidence. So the evidence seems to be that you don't have any silver available for fabrication into coins or coin shops are out of them. And yet that's but one of many parts of the demand equation for silver. And what, again, right or wrong, whether anybody likes it or not, all I can do is look at what the market says. Silver it's kind of in that middle space between gold as a crisis hedge, which it sometimes gets dragged along as, or it's over here with copper and nickel and some other base metals, which have had nice runs recently. So that's why silver has done less bad recently than gold has. But still, I don't think that for silver, the fundamental story has really caught on among generalist investors like it has with copper and other things. Make no mistake, I'm bullish long-term silver. I'm bullish long-term on anything that is a counter to the ever-cheapening fiat dollar or fiat euros or yen or renminbi and all the rest of the fiat currencies out there. So don't misunderstand me, folks. I'm only saying that right now, this whole idea of taking one aspect of the silver market and saying that that's supposed to be what's defining the prices is overly simplistic, and I think it's factually incorrect. You know, now as far as the SLV changes prospectus, I've often pointed out to people in talking about anything that Trevor, whether it is your house in a neighborhood full of houses, whether it is any asset, silver, gold, a share of Apple, a share of Tesla, all of these things are leveraged or hypothecated to one extent or another. And it's all because the belief is that we're going to have an orderly market and that not everybody's going to want to sell things all at once. Your house might be worth $700,000, but if everybody in your neighborhood wanted to sell it at once, you ain't getting $700,000. An ounce of silver might be worth $27. If everybody decided to sell it or short it, it ain't going to be $27. So granted that when SLV changed their prospectus, that's a red flag for a lot of different reasons. Not anything nefarious about the silver market per se, but it just underscores that there's nothing almost as an investor that you can buy that is not based on leverage on top of leverage on top of leverage of the entire underlying structure.
No, doesn't that paint the picture of, you know, what's fundamentally wrong with the market in general?
Absolutely. That's what I said, that what's fundamentally wrong with the market in general is that there's too much leverage. You know, when I had this discussion a few days ago over this whole thing of shorting and whatnot, look, we should not have 3/4 of what goes on in the markets on a daily basis, whether it's done by hedge funds or sophisticated individual investors or mutual funds or whatever. We should not, if I was king for a day, okay, we would strengthen an uptick rule. There would not be leverage allowed in short selling or in going long necessarily securities. When it came to commodities, especially energy, but really all of them, if you were not an end user or customer or wholesaler of those commodities, you would not be allowed to trade in them, period. And I'll tell you why. And we're seeing this happen right now with what's going on down in Texas and Louisiana and so forth, and all of these distortions now because of this weather crisis in energy markets. One of my favorite charts to use to give an example of just how silly things are and how the Fed and the regulators have allowed this casino environment to run rampant almost everywhere is that you can find an oil chart of 2008 and you had a top of over $140 a barrel and a bottom of around 30 within about 7 months' time. Neither of those prices neither of those extremes reflected the supply and demand fundamentals for oil as a commodity, but they were exaggerations on both ends of what happens when speculators who are trading paper and sometimes leveraged paper run a market big one way and then run it the other. And I don't have to tell you or anybody in our audience what that does to consumers and people who are trying to depend on a fair price to produce the product and then a fair price as a customer to buy it later on. So yes, what SLV just did in trying to cover their rear end and say, oh, we're going to be even more leveraged and have less silver on hand because it ain't there, but go ahead and buy our SLV shares anyway. It's not unique to them. It's everybody.
You talked about leverage. I was thinking in the back of my head, I can't remember how much it costs anymore. It might be like $5 a month on Robinhood to get, again, not necessarily knowing how much, but like $20,000 in margin.
Yeah. I mean,
you don't have to, and you don't even have to be 18 or put up any collateral. You just have to pay for it.
And this is what's wrong. Again, this is what's wrong. And this is where people that were all over Robinhood over they're terrible. And they sold out. They sold out to the head. Robinhood was about to go bust. They're a financial company. They're a broker. They have net capital requirements with the NASD and other regulators and no doubt the banks that enable them. And, you know, the idea that they or any firm would allow somebody that and look, the comment I made, they interviewed a guy, Lester Holt, on the NBC News one night during a whole craze and GameStop was going nuts. They interview this college kid who's talking about the money he's making on GameStop and AMC. And they shouldn't have interviewed him because at the end of the conversation, it was clear that this kid that they're using as a poster child for Robinhood investor wouldn't have known the difference if he was reading a quarterly report from GameStop or the Daily Racing Form. And yet we're letting any Tom, Dick, and Harry like this, anybody, open an account and immediately have margin. That's why one kid went way offside that opened a Robinhood account months ago and then killed himself. Now his family is suing Robinhood. All right. Not saying that that lawsuit is correct or the merits of it necessarily. But again, this is endemic. This is what happens when you have a fractional reserve system that is open ended and you have debt on top of debt on top of debt and umpteen different ways to leverage and hypothecate all of it to the point where you've got this incredible overhang of debt and unfunded liabilities. And today, an organic economy that it's all the organic economy can do to even service all of that debt collectively. Forget about ever paying it off. It won't happen. It can't happen. It's not possible. But even to service it. And so this is the reason why we have this environment we do today, whether an SLV or your account at Robinhood or anything is suspect. And everything to such a great extent, unfortunately, is air. It's because that's the environment the Fed had to create because the way its system works, they don't know any other way to do things.
All right, Chris. Well, we're going to leave it at that. There was a lot to cover today. In fact, we weren't even able to cover everything I wanted to chat with you. So we're going to have you back on here probably the next week or two because I do want to get your thoughts here about Ecuador as far as a mining jurisdiction because that's important for our listeners.
Well, I've talked a lot about that lately.
Yes, you have. But, you know, we're going to let those tides kind of settle here and see what transpires here in the next couple of weeks. But I appreciate your time, as always, and have yourself a great rest of the week, Chris.
Hey, and you too.
It's Chris Temple from the National Investor, everybody. Do go to his website, nationalinvestor.com, and maybe inquire about getting a subscription. It's well worth the read. That's it for us. We'll be back tomorrow morning with the morning briefing. Be well, everybody. Thanks.
The information presented should not be considered investment advice. Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein. Please do your own research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decision.